This is the Angry GM, and this is the Angry GM's mostly monthly live chat for the month of March in the year of 2025. And I'm trying to remember if I've done a live chat yet this year. I know I certainly didn't do one during the month of darkness last month when I was afflicted for 3 weeks with the super flu, and I didn't end up doing a live chat then, so I can keep the mostly monthly moniker. If ever there comes a year where I manage to do all 12 monthly live chats, I will have to stop calling them the mostly monthly live chats and start calling them monthly live chats again. But I don't see that happening anytime soon. Anyway, welcome to all of you to the March Mostly Monthly Live Chat, and hello to everybody who has chosen to listen live. Thank you for hanging out. I also want to start by thanking absolutely everybody who responded to the big-ass update I posted last week. I got a lot of messages. I got actually some of you took the your support is really important right now thing very seriously, and I am tremendously grateful for that. Some of you took it a little bit too seriously, and I am grateful to the point of uncomfortable and embarrassing for that, and embarrassed for that. But nonetheless, I am absolutely grateful to everyone. It was not meant to be begging for money. I think some people took it that way, like I'm in financial trouble, begging for money, kind of a thing. And I, on a read through, it did kind of look like that. I'm sorry about that. Though it is true that until I get this stuff with Patreon resolved, there is a little bit of a downswing in the support that this is going to help cover. And also, I did make a comment that I think that we are heading into dark times in the hobby. And I believe that is true. Okay. By all accounts, the latest, the revision of the 2024 revision to the Dungeons and Dragons rule set is not doing very well. It is not getting much traction or adoption. And it looks like I just had a notification a few minutes ago, and I have to look into what this is, but somebody is suggesting that Project Sigil, which is the VTT, has also been floundering. That's Wizards' proprietary VTT. Now, love D&D or hate it, love Wizards of the Coast or hate them, your personal opinions of D&D and Wizards of the Coast notwithstanding, and how you wish it was and how you think it was notwithstanding, the simple fact of the matter is the industry is a monopoly, and Wizards of the Coast feeds the entire industry, its marketing, its fan base, its community. When Wizards of the Coast takes a downturn, when D&D takes a downturn, so does everybody. That's just how it is. And a lot of that is precisely because D&D is the influx of people into the hobby. Most people who discover the hobby discover it through D&D, and then after filtering through D&D, they discover other role-playing game products. D&D is the one that gets written about in the, on like gaming sites and in the news. And it's the one that gets movies and video games. And it's the one that, appears in TV shows and things like that. It's the name everybody in the world has heard of, even if they don't know what it is. And when they get curious about that game, they don't get curious about role-playing gaming. They get curious about Dungeons and Dragons. Every community, every industry, every hobby, everything is a leaky bucket. Okay, this is a standard marketing idea where you are always losing customers. You are always losing members of your community, your fan base, your readership, whatever it is. This is just normal. people always drift away from things. Some people just, you know, they don't have time for it anymore. They have a kid or a family, and so they put gaming aside. And, or some people sadly reach a point and pass away, and they're out of the community, and this and that. So people are always leaving a market. There is always an outflow. So in order for a market to even stay the same size, there needs to be an inflow that at least equals the outflow. Every market needs new blood into it. Wizards of the Coast and Dungeons & Dragons does all of the marketing for the entire role-playing game industry. They attract all of the new people to the bucket. Everybody, then we all divide up everything that falls out of Wizards of the Coast's bucket, or everything that everyone that discovers Dungeons & Dragons is not for them, or we're talking to a D&D player and say, you know, have you ever tried Call of Cthulhu? Or, you know, have you ever tried Shadow Dark? Whatever it is, okay, we're all taking the Wizards of the Coast is filtering most of the new people through, and then we're taking them from them. That's the state of the industry. In order to knock Wizards of the Coast down and take it out and take over the industry without just destroying the industry, whoever takes over has to be able to market the industry. It's the only way it works. And since Dungeons & Dragons is still right now the number one most recognized brand name in the world, more people have heard of Dungeons & Dragons than have heard of Coca-Cola across the entire globe, I shit you not, that's a really tough thing to take over. And I bring this up right now, partly this is why I had my doom and gloom prediction of we're in for an industry downturn. And a downturn doesn't have to be disaster, it just means there's going to be fewer eyeballs going around, and all of the community content creators and everybody who's doing things and making their own games and whatever, we're all going to be competing for a smaller pool. And it's going to be a little rough. And you know what? Some content creators are not going to make it through. This is normal. Eventually, there will be an upturn again. Wizards of the Coast will course correct. And there will be another edition of D&D. Or something new will rise. Or the industry will go bankrupt and disappear. And so the hobby will pretty much vanish with it. And of course, the hobby won't vanish completely. Like, there will always be people playing D&D. There will always be old schoolers still playing with their old AD&D rule books. And there will be people keeping the game alive this way and that. And there will be little websites and pocket communities where it's like, I mean, you can find these for certain games right now. You can find, there is a guild of people who are still playing Dragon Dice, an awesome game from the 90s that was like, what if Magic the Gathering was made out of random booster sets of dice, which made it expensive and clunky, and it did not work, but it was a great game. In fact, I have like 5 pounds of Dragon Dice. And every once in a while, I'll build some armies and I can teach you, because it's really, really cool. Okay, there, you can find all these pocket communities. It's not like it'll be gone forever, but we're approaching a downturn, and we're all going to take a hit for it. The other reason I bring this up is because Shadow Dark, West Marches, or the West Marches of Shadow Dark, or Shadow Dark West, or a new Shadow Dark product has just hit Kickstarter in the past week. It did immensely well in the first 48 hours. It did about 1.3 million, which is fantastic. And if you haven't checked out Shadow Dark, Shadow Dark is a pretty neat game. If you want a D20 game, if you want a D&D game that has modern design elegance, but a more old school-y type, you know, hex crawly, dungeon delvey, you know, XP for gold kind of a feel, Shadow Dark is the game to go for, and it did really well. And, you know, God bless it. I'm very, very happy for those involved, especially because They're really good people, and the Arcane Library, the folks behind Arcane Library were readers of mine for years. I corresponded with them in the past, and they have done great, and it's really good to see. But if you go on certain social media sites right now, everybody is saying this proves D&D is dead and Shadow Dark is taking over and Wizards of the Coast is quaking in its boots. And I'm like, guys, it does not work that way. And I'm trying to tell content creators, hey, look, if you make a living off D&D, you need to shore yourself up. You need to expect times are tightening up. Now is the time to either do something big to distinguish yourself or go into survival mode, cut your costs, and make sure that you can get through it for a little while. It doesn't help that a lot of content creators are all trying to throw their own alternative to D&D into the market right now. One of the big mistakes I have made with the whole Slapdash project is I didn't move faster on it 2 years ago. So now it's not a great time to do it. I'm going to do it anyway because my philosophy is go big or go home. And I am shoring myself up. I'm taking good business steps. I'm paying careful attention, obviously, or I wouldn't be talking about this. But that is why I said there may be dark times ahead and we all need to protect ourselves from it. And the fact that a bunch of you did, you know, throw in your support or just send me a message of, hey, I'm really glad you're doing what you're doing, or thanks for this message, or you can do it, we still believe in you. All of that stuff really helped me. And obviously I put out a content release schedule. And I did say that it's, you know, this schedule is a little bit wishful thinking at the beginning. This is where I'm going to try and be with the benchmarks, but I'm going to be off by a day or two here and there until everything gets purring. And I am a little off. And I should talk, I'll talk about that in a second. Actually, I'll talk about that now. I'll explain the whole losing the plot thing too. So anyway, that's it. That's the whole thing. But I really wanted to say thank you to everyone who responded, and just to everybody in my community and everybody who is listening and reading and still believes in me, despite the fact that I myself have gone through a pretty serious downturn. It's been rough. It's been the worst year and a half of my life. I keep saying that. It keeps being true. It's a little less true every day, but the fact that I have so many people cheering for me not to put too fine a point on it, but I'm pretty sure there were times when this community saved my life. And I think some of you know what I mean, and that's just all I'm going to say on that. Anyway, so you guys are all waiting for, because this is still the news portion, you guys are still waiting for the third part of the Losing the Plot articles, a series of articles about losing the plot in which I lost the plot and also invalidated the ending of. So this is what happened. I really did hit a point with my AD&D 2E campaign where I felt like I didn't know what the hell I was doing anymore. I knew, you know, I had started with a plan and a vision. And when I say a plan, I don't mean, you know, I had a plot and I knew these things were going to happen. I mean, that's true too, but I'm talking more about a vision, you know, where you sit down and you imagine this is the way my campaign is going to play and it's going to feel wonderful and we're going to do this thing, these things, and the players are going to love it and this is why and these, you know, a vision, right? Which did include a bit of a plot because I do quest campaigns. Here's your quest. Go out and save the kingdom from the princess or whatever, right? So I realized that I had been kind of spinning my wheels for a while. And every time I sat down to prep, I was having trouble figuring out what the hell to do with the game. And so it's like, okay, I'm really not sure where to go or what to do. Things feel a little off right now, and that's fine. I'll just, you know, let things go this week and I'll just prep what I can and I'll run a short session and then I will really sit down and figure it out, right? And then on top of that, I made some bad mistakes at my table. I made some bad calls at my table. So there came a day where I'm sitting getting ready to prep. And I had to just throw up my hands and say, you know what? I don't even know what the hell I'm doing anymore. Still having fun. I still love running this game. I still want to finish it. But I don't know. It's just a big old mess. And I don't even know where or how to begin. And that seemed like a good metaphor for other things in life as well. And, you know, obviously some of you know that I kind of have been feeling that way in my life, some for obvious reasons and some for not. But it also seemed to me to be a very common thing that game masters would feel. At some point, you've been running a campaign for a while, you had a vision, you were really excited to do it, and then at some point, you're looking around and you're like, what is actually going on? How did I get there from here? I'm not sure if I'm doing what I really want to do with this anymore. I'm not sure if I'm enjoying it, but I'm not sure if I'm satisfied with it. Like, it's fun to run the games. It's fun to hang out with my friends. But I walk away from every session feeling like, what did I actually just do? Like, what is this? And so that was the inception of the Losing the Plot series. And originally I was going to do a two-parter. Part one was me explaining, what it means to lose the plot. Part two was, I have a really good recovery plan. And again, the recovery plan is not for my campaign, but it is about how do you recover when you find yourself sitting there. And the reason I have a recovery plan to share is because I had a recovery plan for my game. And I decided to take a step back and say, how, like in the general sense, when you are feeling that way, how do you get back to where you wanted to be or figure out where you need to be instead? How do you evaluate? How do you sit down and look at the problem and then say, what are the steps I need to take to somehow get out of this mire? Whether it is to get yourself back on track or to start moving in a more proper direction, whatever it is, or to just accept that you are where you are, lean into it, and then build a plan around that. Whatever it is, there's a way to recover. And I figured out a five-step process to apply to my campaign. But partway through step two, one of my players did something terrible to me and gave me an opportunity to talk myself into completely changing my entire campaign, switching systems and doing something totally different. I can't talk about all the details here, and that's a whole other long story. It was one of these things where I made a flippant remark where I said, you know, if I just changed this, this, and this, and we were running a completely different system, and I was doing this and this and wrote some other rules, everything would be fine. And one of my players, who actually got a little excited about some of the particulars, looked at me and said, well, could you do that? And I'm like, look, I'm just making a stupid comment. I couldn't do that. I mean, yeah, I honestly could, and it would actually... I mean, it would take a few weeks of work. Like, if you get, but honestly, we're on hold anyway. And he just stepped back, and the other players saw what was happening, and they all thought it was a good idea too. So they all just stepped back and let Angry talk himself into changing everything. And so I no longer need a recovery plan because I have to do something way worse. But that's a story for another time. I will share that story when it's ready for prime time. It's not ready for prime time. Nonetheless, it did kind of suck the wind out of my sails for finishing the third part because I don't like to write about stuff hypothetically. I like to write about stuff that I know or have done. So now I invented this process and I wanted to go through it and then use my going through it as the example, just like I used every terrible decision that I made as a game master as the example of how you lose the plot in the first place. Which, by the way, that was not every bad decision I have made. That was 1/4 of the bad decisions that I have made in the process of running this campaign into an iceberg. Though I still do blame the one particular player who did say, you know what, instead of going on this awesome adventure that Angry's really been excited to run, let's go to the library and see if we can't just look up the answer in a book. And I'm getting revenge on that player now by killing his master slash father figure in brutal fashion. So that'll teach my players a lesson in not playing the adventure I wrote. So anyway, I still have that article coming and it's almost done. It'll be here in a day or two and then I'll be closer to being on track with the release schedule. But just so you remember that release schedule, if I'm not hitting it now, it's a series of benchmarks that I eventually mean to be aligned with. So don't panic. But I lost the plot on my losing the plot articles, which was about me losing the plot on my campaign, while also losing the plot in my life. Okay, so there's that. And nobody's throwing any questions out in the chat. So I'm going to move on to addressing some stuff that came in through the thread, rather than continue to ramble on about all of this stuff. And so one of the things, the reason I put this at the top of the list is because it's going to be one of those things that it's going to take me a minute to talk about. But meanwhile, if anybody has any questions, please, by all means, throw them out in the chat using the red exclamation marks so that I see them. But one of the things that came up was something that I said like a long while ago, apparently, and I don't remember how long a while ago it was, and closed the thread so I can't look back at it. Oh, wait, I guess I can. Because it's really important. Oh, okay, it was 2 months ago. It was back in January. This is... there was a conversation apparently going on in general chat about non-combat challenges and yada, yada, yada. And degrees of success, degrees of failure, all this other stuff, and ongoing tasks. And I said, rather than weigh in on the conversation, which was an interesting design conversation, I decided to do a comedy bit about meeting Chris Hemsworth instead. And then I said, I could weigh in on this, especially why I don't think skill challenges are a good solution to the problem and never were, but I can't right now. Here's a smoke bomb, and I disappeared. Oh, and I did say, apparently, add it to the list of things to remind me to talk about next week or during a live chat or something. So I guess Diego was just doing what I asked by throwing it out there. But yeah, so skill challenges. Why don't I think they're a great idea? Okay. The skill challenges, like, they've existed in they've cropped up in games before. But where they got to the real popular consciousness in role-playing gaming was when they became a core feature of D&D 4th edition. And I'm going to slag on 4th edition now, and I know Arthur is in the chat listening, and I'm sorry, but we're going to do another slag on 4th edition because that's what we do here. Anyway, the idea behind a skill challenge, and it was It was a good idea. It was an attempt to solve something that needed solving. The idea was there are actions that should take a little bit of work that shouldn't just be one die roll, right? And I mean, like, when you look at a combat encounter is not just one die roll. The players are making a lot of different decisions from moment to moment. The situation is changing in order to resolve this encounter or this situation or this problem. And there are other things that should work like that too. For example, anything social interaction, like a negotiation or like trying to talk your way past, like sweet talk your way past a guard or con your way somewhere you shouldn't be or convince the king to send aid to Gondor or whatever it is. These are examples of things that shouldn't be resolved with just one single die roll, but which should instead involve a bunch of different decisions and changing situations, a dynamic encounter where the players take an action, it works or it doesn't, but that changes the situation, and then someone else has to take an action to and which creates an opportunity, and then as the players start to win, they push forward, which moves toward victory. However, I mean, again, you think about like the way a combat plays out. These are the way, it's that same sort of dynamic of gameplay, which is not the same as a gameplay dynamic, okay? But it is that sort of dynamical encounter gameplay stuff where the players should have to do several things and, throw actions in and, make stuff happen. So 4E's solution was a thing called the skill challenge, which on its surface was a task that required multiple actions, ostensibly from multiple different players, so that different people could get involved, in order to basically achieve enough successes. You think about it like, you have to throw X many successful actions at this, and then the challenge is resolved. Now, I'm not going to go too specific into the execution that 4E chose, because there were some, number one, there were some specific mistakes 4E specifically made, but also there were a few things that were absolutely not mistakes that a certain kind of gamer thought was a mistake and spoke about very loudly on forums and what have you. That's a whole separate discussion, okay? The bigger issue here is the concept of a skill challenge is, it's sort of flawed on the face of it because the first thing is, as soon as you call it a skill challenge, okay, you have already made a mistake, okay? Because what that suggests is that this chunk of gameplay is entirely driven, the primary driver of the action is the approach the players choose. Okay. Which I know it sounds weird to say that that's a problem, but when you think about a combat, combat is not defined by, I'm going to make a, this is a melee challenge, or this is a challenge that will require melee and range combat, or this is, instead, when you're building it, you're focusing on, here is a problem the players must solve, and they have a vast toolbox of things to do to solve it. And every one of those things leads to a dynamic interaction. skill checks do not lead to dynamic interactions by themselves. Okay? And you could say, okay, combat is based on attack rolls, and attack rolls are the same as skill checks, and they technically are, but it's never just, like, the whole thing with an attack roll in combat is, yes, you hit or you miss, but if you hit, it doesn't resolve a situation. It deals some damage, and the damage is subtracted from a creature, which, you know, yada, 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 hurts the creature, but it doesn't necessarily kill the creature. And then it creates this other choice of, well, now do I keep attacking this creature and move on to something else? Or do we focus our fire on one creature? Because it's not as simple as just, I rolled a success, and now one creature is dead, and we are one creature closer to winning the fight. There is a much more complex interplay of mechanics going on where it's not really the attack roll that is the, just the binary outcome of the attack roll that's determining what's going on there, right? Whereas with a skill check, the basic way all game masters think about skill checks in games is this. You roll a check. If the check succeeds, the action is successful. If the check fails, the action fails. Which makes perfect sense, but that isn't gameplay. Okay, there's nothing gameplay about rolling a check to see if it works or not. It's the opposite of gameplay. That's just random chance. Okay, the only gameplay is in the player choosing what skill to make or what check to throw, right? That's where the gameplay comes in. Am I going to sweet talk the king, or am I going to threaten the king? Or am I going to lie to the king? And how am I going to, like, that approach is the gameplay. And then the skill check is just determining how it turns out. Okay. The other problem with skill challenges, and the other reason why the whole idea is flawed, is because there's nothing ever coming back the other way. Okay. Again, looking in a combat situation, the big thing with combat is, yeah, you're trying to kill the enemy, but the enemy is also trying to kill you. Okay. There is a tug of war going on there. You know, you're taking actions, but so is the enemy, and they are taking actions not just in opposition to you. They're not just trying to stay alive. They're actually trying to accomplish a goal of their own, in this case, destroy you. So you always have at the back of your head this conflict of motives between kill the enemy or stay alive. And as the situation shifts, your priorities do as well. Now, D&D isn't always the best at this shifting priorities in combat because you have two goals in conflict thing, but it does happen in even in D&D, and I don't want to have that whole fight. But my point is that in a skill challenge, there wasn't ever anything coming, or there isn't anything coming back the other way. Okay, everything was dependent on the players just rolling checks. So in order for every skill challenge to have a way to move toward failure, the idea was like you had either a time limit, and it depends on the game. Fourth edition used, when you failed, you moved it toward failure, right? So every skill check, it had a target number of successes based on its difficulty. It had a number of skills that were applicable. And then the players would take actions, and in theory, the GM would match those actions to the appropriate skills. The player would roll a check. If it succeeded, they accrued a check. If it failed, they accrued a strike. And if they accrued too many strikes, the whole thing failed. And if they accrued enough successes, the whole thing succeeded. In theory, it looks like a perfectly valid chunk of gameplay, but in practice, it's not gameplay at all. Especially when you consider that by predefining the approaches, you're taking away the one element of gameplay that still existed, which was the players need to choose their approaches. And that is why I'm an advocate of, in fact, the whatever stat that I invented was a response to the skill challenge. Because the whatever stat by itself is just a number that shifts between victory and defeat. Okay? So it gives a GM a numerical representation of how close to success or failure a situation is. So if I'm running a complex negotiation, and you know, the players are trying to let's do something simple. The players are trying to talk the king into sending aid to Gondor. So I can set a score on the king's willingness to send aid. And I could say, okay, at the start, it's at 5. If the players can push it up to 10, the king will agree to send aid. If it goes down to 0, the king has heard enough, he is insulted, or he is just, he doesn't want to hear anymore, whatever, he kicks the players out of their throne room. Okay? On its surface, that sounds like a skill challenge. But the more important thing about it is that instead of having a list of skills and approaches, the GM instead watches what the players do and evaluates their actions based on that floating score, right? So if one of the players says something like, you know, back 50 years ago, Gondor sent aid to you, and now they need your help, you know, the honor of your family, your dynasty, is now thrown into question. The game master can say that action is valid for moving the meter one way or the other. It certainly could, because on the one hand, it could certainly, you know, open the king's heart, and the king could say, you know what, you are right, I am on my honor to do this. On the other hand, it could lead the king to being insulted, like, you know what, how dare you question my honor? Yes, I did, you know, my family did help Gondor 50 years ago, and since that day, or Gondor did help me 50 years ago, or whatever it was, but since that day, they have done nothing but chew away at my borders and ignore their, you know, the brigands that, as you know, that hide in their woods, that come into my lands or whatever, and now I am insulted. And so you have the two actions. One pushes the meter up, one pushes the meter down. And on top of that, the response gives the players something to play off of. You know, and I see a question is coming up, meaning that I haven't conveyed my point properly. Because in the Gondor social situation example you just gave, do I list the potential ways of moving the meter, or do I adjudicate based on the fly, based solely on player actions? And it's that second one. The first one is how you end up in a skill challenge. That's how you end up in the players can use persuasion to add a +2 to the meter. The players can use intimidation to add a +2 to the meter, but if they fail, that will add a -2 to the meter. No. Okay? The idea is the meter is there. You know what the meter represents as a game master. You let the players take the actions that seem appropriate, and then you narrate the results. And meanwhile, you have a list of, say, 3 reasons why the king doesn't want to help Gondor. Okay, because then I look at this. So let's say the players say that thing. You know, 50 years ago, Gondor helped you, and on your honor, you owe them help. And then I say, they roll, clatter. Oh, good success. The meter moves. Tick, tick, tick. I'll tick the meter up 2. Okay, now it's at a 7. The king's still not convinced. The scene is not over. The encounter is not done. So now I look at it and I say, all right, the king has been convinced, but he has, I look at the objections that I had. Another objection is that there is fighting in the south and his troops are committed to it, and he has to protect his own borders first. So he can say, fine, you are right. My honor binds me to help Gondor, but there are skirmishes in the south, and I need my soldiers on that border to protect from the orcs that keep raiding my lands. I cannot afford to send aid right now. You know, and now the players can think, you know, I don't know, I'm having trouble coming up with something. But now the players can say something, fine, you know, yes, you do have to protect your borders. And we, but surely every one of your soldiers is not committed to dealing with the some brigands that are raiding. Like, you know, you have a mighty army. Does your entire mighty army have to be committed to this? Are you not powerful enough to deal with some bandits and still send even a token garrison to Gondor to help them? Or if Gondor gets overrun by the hobgoblins, then the hobgoblins will then be marching across your border next. And they will be now fighting you divided from Gondor. And, you know, the brigands on your border to the south are now no longer a problem, because the bigger problem is the Hobgoblin Imperium is now marching on you. So you will be remembered as the king who handed your neighbor to the Hobgoblin Empire. But you won't be remembered for wrong, because your people will be dead soon thereafter. Something like that. I don't know. I'm very good at playing social scenarios, I guess. And then, again, the GM could say, okay, that definitely could convince the king, but once again, that, you know, could offend the king. You know, let's roll clatter, clatter, clatter. Okay. But the whatever stat by itself isn't the whole story either. And, you know, you can do a whatever stat for anything. You can do a whatever stat for mixing a potion. You know, it's the same thing. The potion completed or the potion explodes? There is an issue where you start to move into the players are taking actions they have no concept of taking. Like, this works good in a social situation, because obviously, you know, we all know how to talk. But in a situation of, like, you know, competitive alchemy, the players have no basis to choose actions like, well, you know what? I'll just add some root of Senet and grind it down and make a reduction. That will obviously move the whatever stat two spaces to the right, because that's how root of Senet works. Like, you know, there are points where you have to be aware of, you need some abstractions and stuff. But in the general case, the whatever stat gives you a skill challenge like tool without destroying the gameplay, and it has you, the game master, focus not on the skills but on the obstacles that the players must overcome. Because remember, when you build a combat encounter, you don't build the combat encounter thinking, well, you know, the players are going to attack, so, you know, if they attack, this will happen. Instead, you build a combat encounter from some monsters, and you say, okay, I'm going to have some goblins, and then they have an ogre in a cage, and the goblin will hack open the cage and let the ogre out, but the ogre, you know, whatever you do, you're focused on building the challenge or the situation. You're not really worried so much about like coming up with a list of approaches the players can take. That's how you build a challenge. But now imagine if in that same situation with the king, there is a seneschal or an advisor. So the king's advisor, and he is definitely opposed to Gondor. Maybe even like his daughter ran off with a Gondorian Raquel, and he blames all of Gondor are just full of terrible people because his daughter eloped, right? And so now he's talking against the players. So now there's an opponent on the field who also can take actions to shift the meter, right? And so now I can start to create more complicated situations. Or I can create a situation where the king does have limited patience, where in addition to the whatever the stat, and if it gets to 10 or if it gets to zero, great, terrible, whatever, this is, but the king also only has so much time for this shit before he just loses it. And so every time the players roll a check, I also secretly make a mark off his patience. And when I have marked five marks off his patience, he's just done. Do I show the players the whatever stat? No, I don't show the players the whatever stat meter. Just like I don't show. Sorry, I realized that sounded emotional. I should not be so flabbergasted by the question. It is a valid question. The problem is sometimes in my head, things seem very self-evident to me because I have the benefit of seeing everything that is in my head. And so it looks super obvious to me. And then someone asks a question and I'm looking at everything that's in my head and thinking, that is self-evidently, the answer is self-evident. How can I even be asked this question? And then I get a flabbergasted response. And I am sorry, BC56, that is not fair. You have no telepathy. You cannot hear what is inside my head. And that may be the most even-tempered thing I have ever said. I do not show the players the whatever the stat for the same reason I do not show the players enemy hit points. Okay? Instead, I narrate the world such that attentive players should be able to make some kind of guess about what's going on. Just like I will give players a sense of how injured an enemy is, but I am not going to tick down their hit points in front of the players. I ideally don't want the players to see any game mechanics at all. I really don't. Okay. I want them to be able to see the world and assess the world because I do, to some extent, this is going to sound crazy. You do want the players working on incomplete information and having to make their best guesses. Okay, that's part of player skill. I know player skill is a dirty word, but you do have to leave an opening for the players to be good at something or to get something right. And one of the things is, can you read this situation and figure out the best approach? If you miss all the clues that the king is losing his temper until he finally stands up and says, get the hell out of my throne room. I will never march onto the field alongside the Gondorians, and I do not want you darkening my doorstep ever again. And that comes as a complete surprise until the players walk out and they say, you know, we kind of should have seen that coming. He was, you know, the GM did keep saying that he was like sputtering and, you know, like gradually getting more and more angry, you know, like remember the ultimate test of whether you're doing it right as a GM is if the players fail at something and then say, okay, we should have seen that coming because X. You know, I had a situation some months ago where the players, there was an imp that had shapeshifted into a rat that was following around the players and their NPC. Which, by the way, this might sound similar to two other stories I have told. And that is not because I keep telling the same story three times. It is because apparently shape-shifting rat dogging the party is just one of my signature moves. Kind of like having a child eaten by an insectoid praying mantis centipede that lunges out of the ground. one of the problems I'm facing currently is that one of my groups I have been running games so long for that they're starting to see the same situations crop up and realizing these are my signature moves. It's like, oh, hey, another centipede monster has burst out of the ground while we have to protect a child. Huh. It just turns out I have patterns. And one of my patterns is shape-shifting rat dogging the party. And the players had gradually become aware that there was something up with the rat. I think the players actually knew the rat was a shape-shifting something. I think they had finally, they tried to throw it off a cliff or something, and it turned into a bat to fly away, or it sprouted bat wings to fly away. And the players were like, you know, I don't think we're dealing with your garden variety cave rat anymore. Also, it talked, but, you know, that's neither here nor there. So the rat was dogging the party. And at one point near the end of the situation, one of the NPCs they were with was in the corner, hands cupped together, muttering to herself. And she was just like, she had her hands cupped together and she was kneeling, she was hidden in the corner. She had been growing increasingly distraught. A lot had happened. This was a really bad day in her life and in the party's life. And she was just like clutched her hand, you know, had her hands cupped together, clutched, and she was muttering to herself, like she's muttering in prayer or like she's, you know, going into a dissociative episode or whatever. And then she went nuts and attacked someone. And then the imp appeared and stabbed someone to death with deadly poison, because it's second edition. So most poisons are make a saving throw. You failed. Oh, you died of poison. Like most poisons in D&D second edition are just instant death poison. It's just one of the things. It's one of AD&D 2E's signature moves. Anyway, and so the players, like this whole flurry of activity, there's suddenly stabbing, someone's getting stabbed by an imp, it's totally shy, like, you know, all in the surprise round. And then the imp is flying away with this ancient relic that is super, and is super important MacGuffin. And one of the players turns to the other and says, you know what? I knew she was talking to that rat demon thing and it was doing something and I should have gone over there and stopped it. This one's on me. And I'm like, yep, I played that exactly right. I telegraphed every moment, got to the point where as soon as everything went to shit, the players said, we really should have seen that one coming. That one's on us. Okay, anyway. But I don't want to show the players any mechanics if I can avoid it. But I don't even remember what the question was, and I've lost track of time. So I'm going to lose other questions here because I think I've lost the plot. I think originally it was, are skill challenges good? And now it's, oh, you know, sometimes I just stab people with shape-shifting rats while children are being eaten by Lanmulas from Legend of Zelda Link to the Past, which, by the way, that's what it is. I love the Legend of Zelda Link to the Past Lanmula fight is what I'm always doing every time I have a burrowing NKG or, you know, a carrion crawler burst out of the ground or whatever it is. It's always me going back to Legend of Zelda Link to the Past. And that's not even like my favorite boss fight, but it is one that I just love doing over and over again. So, you know, as you do. But anyway, so what I prefer instead of a skill challenge, and this is my point, I'm going to skip to the end and skip a few steps here, because at some point I'm going to have to write all of this up. Instead of a skill challenge, I prefer an encounter building toolset, a set of different mechanics that can represent different things that the game master can put together to represent a challenge. The whatever stat is one of them. It is your progress tracker. And you can have two or three of them. And you can have different rules about them. Because really all it is it's a meter that goes all the way one way or all the way the other way. You can start at zero and have it go all the way up to 10. Or you can have it start at zero. And the higher the players push it before the end of the encounter, and maybe you have a timer. Again, okay, let's do the Gondor thing, and let me show you how I can use those two tools to make a completely different tool set or a completely different encounter or at least a different challenge in the 5 minutes I have left. And I have to ignore all the other questions. Yeah, the five-minute warning just came in here. Okay, so let me show you same tools, different encounter or different challenge. Same setup. Players are going to the king. They want aid to be sent to Gondor. But in this case, what I've decided is the king is willing to send some aid, okay? But the better the players do in the encounter, the more aid he will send to Gondor, okay? If the players impress the king more, more soldiers will be pledged, okay? Right now, the king is at zero. He's at, fine, I'll send a little token force. I'll send, you know, one of my knights and, you know, like maybe, you know, if, like leading like 50 infantry, something like that, right? A fist of infantry, something. Okay. And if it gets up to 10, it's like, yeah, I'll pledge the entire Eastern, my whole Eastern army, whatever it is. Okay. So now again, whatever stat, but in this case, it's 0 to 10 is how sympathetic the king is to the plight of the Gondorians, or how impressed the king is by the players, whatever it is. You know, I'll decide what that is. Let's go with how much respect the players earn from the king, how much they have wowed him with, like, these are really good people, and, you know, I'm going to side, you know, I want to give it my all because these are good people and I really believe in them and they have moved me. Okay. So then, and again, now the other thing I need is a timer, right? Because now I need to know when the encounter ends, because when the encounter ends, that's when I check the score. And if the score is at 5, he sends this many. And if the score is at 10, he sends this money. And if the score is at 2, he sends this many. Same two tools, very different challenge with completely different outcomes. And that's what I want, is I want a set of tools where a game master could say, I want to build a challenge where if the players go to the king and they impress him and earn his favor, he will pledge support to an ally, and the better they do, the more support they will pledge. Or I want to build a challenge where the players go to the king, and the king doesn't want to help his ally, and they have to convince him to do it before they get thrown out of the throne room. And in both cases, by the way, the timer is just the king's patience. And by the way, patience is a standard timer I put on NPCs. It is the NPC being like, it's the NPC being, oh shit, I'm out of time. I've got 2 minutes left. And there is an important thing I have to do. So I have to do an important thing and then a sign off. Don't mute me if I go 5 minutes over. Okay, because there is an important thing that has to be done here. There was a question Mystic Lamer gave, and this has to be answered, okay? The question was, do I plan to do a second printing of Game Angry? And do I still have inventory available from the first printing? So here is the deal. I still have inventory. If you want to get a copy of the single best book ever written about how to run a game correctly, Game Angry, How to RPG the Angry Way, which also includes a free, ridiculously long module. I mean, it's only like, I say it's 3 sessions, but most people who've run it say it's like 4, 5, 30, or 1 session if parties TPK. That seems to be a disturbing trend too. But nonetheless, you also get a free module with it for D&D, which will get you 3 to infinity sessions, depending on how you run it, whatever. It is still available at https://angry.games/shop. Buy your copy of Game Angry. The physical book, I can only ship it in America. The electronic book, you can buy it wherever you are. I'm sorry about that. It's just currently, that's my only option, is I can only ship in America. So, the question about a second printing, just to be clear, a second printing is something someone does when they're out of inventory and need to resupply, okay? It's not the same as a rewrite, because I floated the idea of potentially doing a new edition of Game Angry, okay? If I had run out of inventory and needed it, I would have to rewrite the book. I can no longer get a second printing, okay? There are reasons. Ask me another time and I'll tell you the reasons. They're technical reasons. But in order to reprint the book, I need to rewrite the book. Also, it needs to be published under my company name instead of the now non-existent publisher that published it. And then I guess you're going to find out what it is. So the publisher that published the book no longer exists. They are out of business. But they also screwed up filing the ISBN number, which is basically, it's just an international standard book number that says this book by the, you know, published by this publisher, written by this person, is this book. It's just a registry of all the books. They screwed up registering that, which I did not catch until I tried to list the book on Amazon. And because the publisher no longer exists, and I don't even know what firm they used to file the ISBN, I cannot even correct the issue. The book cannot be reprinted. That's also why I couldn't sell it on Amazon, by the by, or get it in game stores or get it distributed. The publisher destroyed that project in every conceivable way. Still not bitter. Anyway, there is not in the offing currently a plan to rewrite that book, because I want to focus on, number one, giving my fans the content they want and that I've promised and that they keep financially supporting me for, which I haven't been delivering as well as I could. I have put out 4 articles a month, even if they're all coming out at the end of the month. But I could be doing a lot better on that, and I need to. So that's priority number one. Number two, there's a bunch of people who are supporting an angry role-playing game. And I really want to talk about that too. But I'll save that for next month. I did kind of plug it for now. Somebody remind me next month that I need to talk about the current timeline for Slapdash, for the people who aren't Slapdash holes. What are we calling the members of Club Slapdash? Did we agree? Like, people were throwing out names. Slapdash holes is my favorite. You know, all of you are a bunch of Slapdash holes. Okay. I'm getting a message from the mods. Arthur is sending me a private message. And Process is reminding me that I promised that I would wrap this up if he didn't mute me. Okay, so that's it. Unfortunately, I didn't get to some of the other questions, and I didn't get to my really neat idea for Appendix V, but I guess that's why we'll have to have another live chat next month. So, to everybody who is supporting me, reading my work, to everyone who's excited about Slapdash, to everyone who's cheering me on, thank you again. It has been an immense boon in a very difficult time in my life, and I had thought that time had passed, and then in the last couple of months, it turns out it has not passed nearly as good as I thought it was. But again, no more boo-hoo, poor me. It's, you know, shit or get off the pot, broken crayon, still color, all of that crap. But I do want to say thank you. You have all immensely helped me. I especially want to throw a thank you at Procellus, the product/commercial consumer Metroid, whatever the hell he is now. In addition to his production work, He has been a rock of emotional support for me, just as a friend. He's been a really good friend and has provided me immense emotional support whenever I've needed it. And he is also now the official Slapdash archivist. So he will be helping make sure that Slapdash material actually finds its way to the website as promised. And I do also, I make a lot of jokes about Arthur and the rest of the moderators, especially Arthur, because Arthur, sometimes it seems he's handling 10 times as much moderation issues as I am, or anyone else for that matter. He really steps up, even when the other mods aren't available. So I really appreciate him and all the moderation team. And I also appreciate, because I've been going out into the social media wilds again, because as I said, we're entering a dark time and I need to be being visible in the world again. I need to be filling my leaking bucket. So I have been wandering out into the wilds of social media again. And when I do, as wonderful as the conversations I get to have out there, they remind me how wonderful this community is, because we have gamers of every stripe, of very diverse lives, viewpoints, and gaming preferences, and we all just get along and have a good time, and that means a lot too. It is nice to have a fun place. I know that I have not been very super active on the Discord. I've been active off and on. And unfortunately, that also affects how active the Discord is in general. Because, it is my community. And I need to be here and hanging out and joking around and being a better member of the community. Because I've let my own temper flare and I have treated people badly and I have some people that I am reaching out to personally right now and over the next few weeks who especially deserve apologies for my really piss poor treatment of them, allowing my emotions to do the driving. So that's something that I also take very seriously. Not to beg people to come back or support me or anything, but because when you do someone wrong, they deserve an apology. And that's all there is to it. You own your sins and you repent. That's it. So anyway, all of that has been said, the good, the bad, the indifferent. I am cautiously optimistic about the future. I am very, very excited about the Slapdash project, which has actually accidentally shifted into high gear. And I do want to start making sure that people outside Club Slapdash at least know timelines and stuff. I do want to build hype for it, even for the people who aren't supporting it directly financially, because eventually it's going to be for sale for everyone. So that's another thing. But all of that's a story for another time, because I absolutely definitely have to say goodnight before Procellus hits the mute button, because I am now well past the 5-minute extras that he gave me. So if he were to suddenly mute me at this point, he would be entirely within his responsibilities. But I'm sure he wouldn't do that. And I really do need to wrap this up and stop babbling, because I always have time saying goodbye. I think it's a Midwest thing. I'm originally a New Yorker, but there's certain parts of Midwest.